You are listening to the Joshua Segafis Podcast.
Welcome back to the Joshua Segafis Podcast, the only podcast that teaches you how to be truly alpha. If you're ready to level up to succeed at dating, relationships, business, fitness, and everything else that matters, then stick around. This is exactly where you want to be.
This episode is brought to you by my flagship dating course, Dating in the Wild, The Adult Man Method. Are you sick and tired of a lackluster dating life? Gentlemen, if you know anything about my personal story, you know that I used to suck at dating. I could barely get a text back from a woman, much less a date. I was lonely, depressed, anxious, and felt like my dating life was truly a hopeless endeavor. But I didn't give up, and eventually it all changed. I got to work and figured out how to transform myself from being a total dating zero to an absolute dating hero and succeeded in creating the dating life of my dreams. And in this dating course, you can learn the exact skills, strategies, techniques, and thought processes that I learned over 2.5 years of studying, trial, error, blood, sweat, tears, testing, and lots of hard work. The secret is to learn what women evolved to look for in a mate, and then to develop yourself into the truly masculine, attractive, high-value man who taps directly into the instincts that guide the ever-mysterious female mate selection process. Not only will this course teach you how to transform your dating life, it'll also empower you to become a better, more successful man in the process. So click on the link in the description, grab the course, and get ready to change your dating life forever. All right. We are live. Welcome back to another episode of the Joshua Segafis Podcast. This is the podcast where we learn how to be truly alpha, to succeed at dating, relationships, business, fitness, and everything else that matters. I'm joined today by my friend Holden. Those of you who've watched the show may have seen him on another episode. He's a member of the community. He's going to talk about this topic with me. We're going to bounce some stuff around. The topic for today is, what do women want in a man? And this is I'm pretty excited about this one because I got a request from this, and I'm going to read you the email that I was sent. It is really well worded. And this was in response. I did a video and a blog about the push-pull method. In fact, Holden, I think that's the one you were on with me. And anyway, I sent it out to my email list and I got this email back. Hey, Josh, thank you very much for the push-pull method blog. Anyway, there's something I'm really confused about, which I need your help to explain. And it is part of the article, in the article, which you said women are looking for these values in men. And then he listed what I call the male sexual value metrics: wealth, status, power, tribal connections, leadership ability, and an athletic body. And then the emailer said, but I've read so many times from other blogs which mention the fact that women don't really care about looks, wealth, or status in men. All they care about and are attracted to in men is that you appear confident and that you're not needy. So could you please explain more on why you mentioned these sexual value metrics, especially wealth, status, and athletic body and looks, and why are women sexually attracted to them? So that's the question. Really good question. And I wrote a post about this. I haven't published it yet because I still need to put some bells and whistles on it. But this is, Holden, basically what we're going to bounce around today and talk about this. And I'm just going to go through this, and I've got a bunch of points I'm going to touch on. First, we're going to talk about the evolutionary direction, like why women care about these things. And then we're going to kind of talk about how to level them up, because it's not always clear, I don't think, to men how to actually maximize on these attraction metrics. So we're going to talk about that a little bit. So first of all, I just want to start out by saying that, and me and Holden are actually just talking about this before we got started. You know, the question of what do women want in a man is kind of a mysterious question for a lot of men. A lot of men are legitimately confused by this, and for good reason. Like, I spent a lot of time being very confused about this. Like, I remember being at a point in my life where I was like, I literally don't get it. Like, I do not get it. It feels like you get mixed messages from everywhere. There are people who say, oh, women only like bad boys. And then there are people who say, oh no, you should be nice. Women like nice guys. And then there are people who like women like men who are jacked. And then they say women don't care about looks, and then all this crazy stuff. Right. So it's like very confusing. So I can absolutely understand that confusion. And it actually took me a couple of years, a lot of reading, and a lot of studying, and a lot of interacting with women to figure out the answer to this. And I believe I found the answer, because what we're going to talk about further down in here are actually 7 primary male sexual value metrics. And when I started working on those metrics specifically in my life, and I started acting in the manner that what I'm about to describe were true, like, I started seeing huge returns on my own efforts in dating. So to me, this was this is pretty decent evidence that not only what I'm saying is correct, but I mean, I'm not the first one to say this. I learned this stuff from really smart guys. If you read David Buss, he wrote The Evolution of Desire and Why Women Have Sex. Like a lot of this kind of stuff, he pioneered that in evolutionary psychology. Mm. So anyway, so that's really where this comes from. And it's understandable to be confused about it. Holden, you got anything to say before we jump into this specific stuff?
Well, before we get into the specifics, I would just want to say that Jordan Peterson has mentioned David Buss and has greatly praised him.
Oh, yeah.
And just from the little I've read of David Buss, yeah, I mean, I'm not a full-on science guy, but evolutionary psychology, that is definitely real. It has to be. So that's all I have to say about that.
Yeah, Jordan Peterson is another person who talks about this a lot, which is he's actually just recently been doing a lot of talking about the difference between wealth and resource potential in men, which we're going to talk about, which is actually really interesting. A lot of men overlook the difference between actual wealth and then the ability to generate wealth, which actually are seen as two different things by women. So we're going to talk about that a little bit too. But yeah, no, Jordan Peterson has also talked a lot about these things, especially from the hierarchy perspective, which does matter. A lot of people like to overlook how the social hierarchy and the status hierarchy impact female attraction, because that's a very uncomfortable topic. it basically, if we go down that rabbit hole, we eventually realize that we have a burden of performance as men. If we want to win with women, we can't just say, oh, I wish I could win, and then top 10 quick tips to fix it. We actually have to perform to a certain
level. No one wants to hear that.
No, because it means there's a lot of work to do usually.
Women don't want to hear it either, because they want to believe that we're on the same playing field, and we are absolutely not.
Yeah. And a lot of women don't like to hear truths about female nature. A lot of women get, a lot of women who don't understand their own nature will get very upset if you talk about certain things, which is really interesting. Some women who have read, you can always tell when a woman has read evolutionary psychology, because she'll be like, oh yeah, you know, women do this all the time. I've identified this in my own self, and I just admit, you know, I'm at peace with it because it's true. But then a lot of women will just argue it, which further confuses men, I might add. I've been led astray more than once by a woman telling me something she claimed was true, and it turned out not really to be true. It was just kind of what she wanted to be true about how women act. So anyway, we're going to jump in here, get started on this. The first topic is, what does a woman want that's the second one. What every woman wants in a man. We're just going to jump into this first part of the article here. Obviously, every woman is going to be slightly different based on her own personality type, experience, culture, and preferences. However, underneath all this individual stuff, it's important to understand that virtually all women are still operating with the same basic human mating behavior software programming they've had since we were primitive humans living in caves and being hunter-gatherers. This programming was inherited from their ancestors along a long, unbroken line of evolutionary success stories. The basic answer to this question of what every woman wants in a man is that attraction and romance are actually highly evolved survival mechanisms. We could go really in depth in this topic and make it a lot more complicated, but for the sake of keeping it concise to one podcast episode, we're going to keep it as simple as possible. Basically, the instincts that compel women to feel attraction and romance toward the men they feel these things for are deeply rooted in their instincts for survival. Thus, they're actually instinctually attracted to men who display the types of traits and qualities that are most likely to contribute in a positive way to her survivability, safety, wellness, and security in life. Now, keep in mind, this is not an exact science. And since this is a subconscious instinctual behavior for most women, sometimes the wires do get crossed and the instincts don't exactly line up with what you would consider the rational end goal of those instincts. Okay, so for example, why would a woman choose to stay with a guy who beats her, you know, when that's obviously not good for her health and wellness? Well, there are actually instinctive reasons for this. However, since women are not usually super aware of these instincts, they don't tend to use them all the time in the most like intentional manner. Let's put it that way. However, this does form the basis for why women care about the things they care about and helps us to explain what they find attractive in potential sexual mates. And that leads us to the question of, what does a woman want in a relationship with a man? Okay, so this is next most important thing. At the baseline intellectual level, women want to trade access to their reproductive faculties, which are highly valuable, which is an act that puts a woman and potentially her offspring at significant physical, emotional, social risk for the channeling of a man's resources to her as an investment in her safety, security, and well-being as a partner. Okay. This is the trade that women are looking for on an instinctual level when choosing a mate. And of course, women have evolved to want an equal or greater trade for the value of what they're bringing to the table, which is their feminine beauty, their desirability, the peace they bring to a man's life, their qualities as a homemaker, their ability to provide offspring and procreate, et cetera. And this sets the stage for the give and take that exists within sexual, romantic, human pair bonding relationships, and for the trait very infamously referred to as hypergamy, right? When women want at least equal or greater value for the trade of their reproductive faculties, which basically means sexual access. It also sets the stage for how men and women approach the dating marketplace with slightly different goals and strategies and from different ends of the gender paradigm spectrum. Now, and this is where I'm going to deviate just a moment from what I've written here and say, we have a big problem in our culture where a lot of men are dating with like a feminized mindset. They're trying to date like women because that's what's all over the media. The female mating strategies are plastered all over everything. And oftentimes they're also projected onto men. And men get very confused about this because men are not supposed to date like women. They actually set themselves up for failure when they do this. Keep in mind, once again, that this is mostly all instinctual. Humans engage in these processes without really thinking about them or even understanding them. And this is partly why I talk about this stuff, because understanding how this process works can give you a massive advantage in helping you to level up your ability to succeed at it. At the basic core fundamental level, women want to trade their feminine sexual value in exchange for the masculine values that will help to secure them a safe and successful place in the world for both them and their offspring. Okay, now that concludes the very first part, introductory part. Holden, what do you think? You want to add anything to that?
I completely agree, and I want to add one thing. Looking for, you listed off a bunch of things, like protection, all this other stuff, provisions. They're also looking for prosperity and like abundance. Not only do they want to be taken care of at a flat baseline level, they want to be like extra. They want a man who's above other men. They want a winner.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's interesting that you use the verbiage above other men, which would imply status, which is absolutely one of the value metrics. Absolutely. And speaking of that, that's what we're going to talk about next. Okay. The next question is like what a woman desires most in a man. What women desire most on the dating marketplace is a man who can effectively increase their odds for survival. We've talked about that, but how do women determine this? They do so by looking for a range of important traits. And I call these the primary sexual, or the primary male sexual value metrics. And so we're going to talk about them. And there's seven of them, actually. Usually I only talk about, I think, five of them, but there are actually seven of them. And so because some of them are a bit more, or no, wait a minute. Is there six? No, there's seven. Okay. Yeah, I don't always talk about all of these, but we're going to talk about all of them today. And the reason why I don't talk about the first one, which is high quality genetics, is because generally this one isn't, we can't control this as men. So it's not always applicable to talk about it, but it is important to understand. Okay. So this is number one, high quality genetics. This is really the only attraction factor that you don't have direct control over as a man. However, even though you can't technically control the quality of your genes, you can control how well you display them and how good you make them look when you broadcast them. The idea behind this is simple. Women want a man who looks like a powerful, healthy, attractive, intelligent genetic specimen. And the reasons for this are quite clear. Their instincts drive them to select this type of man because he's going to give them an advantage in the business of life survival for himself and for his tribe. He's also going to give her an advantage when it comes to procreation because his genes will lead to stronger offspring and a better chance of survivability for that offspring. Okay. So this is the first one, high quality genetics. The second one is wealth and resource potential. In our primitive history, wealth would have been measured as a store of resources of things like food, water, tools, a strong shelter, a perimeter encampment to keep the tribe safe from predators and invaders, etc. But nowadays, wealth is basically measured by your store of financial value, i.e. your net worth. Resource potential is slightly different. It's your ability and affinity to generate resources at will and an indication of how your financial trajectory will look either positive or negative over time. Women are attracted to both of these things for obvious reasons. In the modern day and age, financial wealth and the ability to accumulate it at will are basically the modern day equivalents of being a successful hunter-gatherer in more primitive times. A woman who chooses a wealthy man with high resource potential as a mate acquires, both for herself and her offspring, some extra safety and security over the woman who selects a poor man with poorer future resource potential. This is why it seems like in our culture, women are sometimes referred to as gold diggers, and why men with fancy cars, nice suits, expensive boats, beautiful houses, etc., are seen as more attractive. These physical assets are basically wealth and status symbols, and they represent a man's net worth as well as his ability to generate additional resources in the future. And another interesting thing is that women do value wealth, but it's very, like, Jordan Peterson talks about this a lot, and so does David Buss, although I haven't heard David Buss talk about this that specifically as Jordan Peterson. But it's also true that women probably hold men with higher resource potential in a higher regard than just men with wealth. For example, if an unintelligent bumbling fool inherits a bunch of wealth and she knows he'll probably squander it, that's not quite as attractive as a man who right now is poor, but he's like on a trajectory to become rich and she's convinced that that's the truth. That would be a more attractive thing to her. Okay, so with that being said, that's the second one. Holden, you got anything to add to these while we're going through them?
I mean, I probably have a bunch of things here and there of what you said, but this topic is so nebulous. I mean, we're talking about the human race, which is, as far as we know, more complicated than anything else on the entire planet, including computers. And we're also talking about women, which is the more complicated of the two genders. So if I had anything to say, it was lost in the mist of whatever. But I agree.
Yeah. All right. Well, feel free to flag it, throw a flag on the play if you have anything to add. I don't want to miss out on your input or your ideas.
Sure.
All right. Number three is status. Your status as a man is basically your standing and ranking among other men and women in your social circles. A man with a higher status confers upon his family and tribe a higher level of survivability due to his higher rank within the tribal infrastructure. Men with higher status tend to make more money, have better networks, wield more power within the tribe, and are more respected. And they confer greater benefits to their immediate family. I often like to use a very extreme example of status. Like, if you imagine the president of the United States and then just a normal, humble guy in the local community, like, those men have very different levels of social status, right? But imagine, like, think about the benefits that being the president infers upon your children. You could put them in any school you want. Like, you could spare no expense in giving them the best education, getting them the best health care, all these things. Whereas the normal guy, he's gonna have to make maybe more difficult decisions. He has to think, like, man, how can I afford health care? You know, do I need to get insurance? What should I do for school? Should I do public school? Can I afford private school? You know, so status often equates with power and wealth as well. In fact, status usually, well, and tribal connections. But so anyway, I like to use the president as an example of that, because the president is arguably the highest status person in actually the country. Some people say the free world, if you're talking about the president of the United States. So it's a very high status position. All right. Number four is power. All throughout history, women have desired powerful men as mates. And the reasons for this are pretty simple. The more power a man wields, the more formidable and effective he tends to be as a man when it comes to the business of providing survival, safety, and security for his tribe. This factor encompasses not only physical power, but intellectual power, social power, economic power, political power, etc. A weak man with little power isn't going to be seen as being as attractive as a man who wields a lot of it. In fact, women will often choose powerful assholes over kind men who are weak for exactly this reason. This is one of those truths a lot of women don't like to admit. Yes, not usually. Mm-hmm. Yes, rationally, women will admit that it's probably smarter to choose a kind man who's weaker over a potentially, for example, violent or angry asshole who wields a lot of power. However, as you'll often see evidenced by the bad boy stereotype, which actually holds a lot of truth, women often can't help their instincts for these things and will continually gravitate toward men they perceive as being more powerful. even if those men are more volatile and other negative things. So it's very interesting. Number five, tribal connections. Oh, one more thing I should say about this power issue is a lot of men also misunderstand the bad boy stereotype. They think, oh, so women love jerks and assholes. This is how confusing female behavior gets, because do women actually want to date bad boys, quote unquote, like assholes? Do they really want to do that? No. However, their behavior sometimes seems, well, they do in a way, but their behavior can be so confusing because they will often choose those types of men. So, but like, why? The truth of the matter is that being a weak man is easy. Most men fit into this category, and that's unattractive. Becoming a stronger man who also has, like, you know, who's also disagreeable is like the next level up. It's going to be more natural for a man who's disagreeable by nature to have more power, because he's going to be willing to have conflict and confrontation and then overcome his competition to try to increase his power. So right away, disagreeableness gives a man a certain advantage when pursuing power. But here's the thing. The rarest type of man would be an agreeable man who is also powerful. This is a very difficult combination. When I say agreeable, I kind of mean a guy who would tend to display attributes like kindness and respect, but who is also very powerful, who has strong boundaries. We're talking about more of that. That's more of the alpha leader archetype, right? Those are the types of men women would actually prefer. However, they're very rare. Usually agreeable men are weak, and usually disagreeable men are more powerful, right? So that's kind of why the bad boy stereotype is so confusing. So the answer isn't to be more of an asshole. The answer is to be a more powerful man and to strive to live your life with kindness and respect, and while having very ironclad boundaries. Women go crazy over that. Women love that combination. It's just very rare. Right. It's super rare in our society to see that. Number five, tribal connections, the value of his network. It's often been said that your network is your net worth. And there's so much truth to this that women have literally evolved to pay attention to it. A man with a high profile network who mingles with real movers, shakers, and other individuals of power is going to be seen as being more attractive than men who sit alone in their bedrooms, by themselves. In fact, there's a social dynamic to this that women look for as well. The man standing in the center of the room at a party, regaling others with jokes and fun stories will often elicit greater attention and attraction from women than men who quietly sit by themselves in the dark corner, only listening and never contributing to the social environment. The reasons for why women instinctually prefer men with strong tribal connections are pretty clear. The better a man's network is, and the better he is at creating a high value network and influencing other people, the more opportunities he's going to have in life. And thus the better his chances are going to be of building things like wealth, social status.
POAs call it social proof.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, they absolutely do. And so that's a really important one.
That's a tricky one. I'm sorry to cut you off.
No, go for it.
A lot of guys are snake ass weasels. And if you don't have a true tight, close knit circle of dudes who got your back, and you have some fake ass friends, those friends are going to be trying to make you look bad and actually can make you look worse than if you were alone. Cause they just try to, just pick at you and just try to tear you down in conversation. Whereas if you had like a dope social circle where everyone's trying to uplift each other, it's the opposite. You could all make each other look better and basically be wingmen to each other. And I believe that completely.
Yeah, that is true. The quality of your network is really important, because they will, you know, one time I remember I was with this guy and he seemed like a pretty cool guy. You know, I liked him. I thought he was a cool guy. He was a pretty successful guy, but one of the other men in the social group wasn't there at this particular time. And then he pulled up in his car. We were like hanging out, and this guy pulled up in his car. And then this other guy, who was kind of like the leader of the group, he had the highest status, and, you know, he was definitely the leader. Whenever this other guy pulled up, and this other guy was kind of a lower status guy and he was newer to the group. Whenever he pulled up, this guy in the group made a comment to everyone else. He's like, "Oh, here comes that idiot." And I thought to myself, man, what a douchey thing to say. You're the leader here, you have all this power, you have all the status, all these other men look up to you, this new guy looks up to you a lot, and then you say something like that about him. like to everyone else. It's like, if you really thought he was doing something idiotic, it would be much more powerful for you to talk to him privately and address the actual, if there is a problem, rather than just gossiping. Like that's like
feminine.
It is feminine. And it's actually, it's like reputation destruction, which is
catty.
Yeah. Social aggression utilized by women. That's how women fight.
Yeah. That's passive aggressive. If you got something to say to another man, you tell him to his face. Yeah. Straight up.
Yeah. And so like, I didn't hang out in that social circle for much longer because I was like, I see what's going on here. Like there's some cattiness. This isn't real masculine men being straight with each other. And it is hard to find that. It is really hard to find that.
It's hard.
Yeah. And as men, we always want to be aware that we're trying to provide that. Like we don't ever want to talk shit about guys behind their back.
No.
Jocko Willink, actually, I was just listening to his podcast this morning and he talked about that. He was like, a leadership quality as a leader, you always want to be aware of the fact that your words carry weight. When you talk shit about somebody, that could very hurt them. Like it could hurt them. It could hurt the whole tribal dynamic. It will affect how people think. You can't just say things flippantly if you're in a leadership position, which as a man, you should always be striving to be a leader, like a quality leader. So it's like very important. Also, when you give praise, you may not think it'll matter, but if you're a high status man, you give praise to other men who are maybe lower status, that's going to matter a lot. It's going to make them think, oh, that's like, they're going to like to hear that. It's going to really uplift them. And this is a very powerful, positive thing we could do. But a lot of people don't realize that, right?
I would also say, don't try to like usurp the alpha of the group. If you're straight up new to the group or you're just not an alpha guy, don't try to like weasel on someone and snake on them like that. Cause that's just, you're only hurting yourself at that point. Like be a leader in your own little ways maybe. And just be a member of the tribe who's a team player and who's going to be there when you're needed.
Yeah. Who contributes to the overall success of the tribe.
And one day you might be an alpha in your own way.
Yeah, absolutely. Which is really good. That leads to another topic that's actually really interesting is conflict among men and how to understand hierarchy and why it's always a bad idea. Like to alpha challenge a man in his own domain.
Don't.
It's like, it's always going to end badly. Always. Either there's going to be a conflict or there's going to be something. Not that it should never happen, but it should only be done with great care and understanding.
Don't give your boss a Chad handshake when you first meet him. Like, don't try to like manhandle, like, know your place, because people do not like that. Like,
no, they don't like it. No, not at all.
And you want to be friends with your boss. You don't want him to not like you.
Yeah, it's usually in your best interest to not try to out alpha the guy who writes your paycheck. Especially
don't make them look bad.
Especially if you rely on it. Yeah, no, that's good advice.
Don't be a suck up either, though.
No, don't be a suck. You gotta have respect for yourself. Absolutely. Yeah. Number six. Speaking of leadership ability. Women have a strong instinct to look forward into the future. In fact, when they start to lose respect for a man and or they start to doubt that this man is capable of leading his family in a victorious direction in life, there's a strong probability that if a more powerful, secure, leadership-oriented man were to enter the picture, she might naturally monkey branch over to him as her desires are pulled over by virtue of her instincts to this potential new suitor. Okay. Now, this is another uncomfortable truth a lot of women don't like to hear. There's a trope that it's like women leave men when they run into hard times and they leave to monkey branch over to men who are winning. It kind of goes back to like what you said earlier, women want to be with winners. A lot of women don't like this. They try to say, oh no, I'm loyal. I'm ride or die, blah, blah, blah. But it's like, okay. Like there's a reason why, you know, there's a saying, and I think I've heard Richard Cooper say it. I think that's where I first heard it. Let's see, where's it go? The real test of a woman's loyalty is when her man is unsuccessful. And the real test of a man's loyalty is when he becomes successful. And so there's a lot of truth to this, right? Women don't like to hear this, but I'm going to talk about this in another minute here. This is another trope that, while often decried by women, more often than not does play itself out as being true. And to be honest, you can't really blame women for acting this way. Well, The truth of the matter is that a woman must be diligent about the forward trajectory of her life and the life of her offspring if she wants to survive and thrive. And if the man she's involved with shows signs of heading for some kind of disaster and or is spiraling downward, then her instincts basically tell her, you need to take action here. If this ship goes down, you and your children go down with it. It may be time to bail and find a more secure ship for the journey to the future.
And she would say, well, he wasn't really giving me the emotions I wanted. There wasn't that spark anymore. It's like,
yeah that's how they describe it.
That's how they describe it. It's because maybe he was so stressed out. Maybe he lost his job or some shit was going on. He didn't have the time to be with you. And it really is. If there's a woman that stays with you when you're down bad like that, dude, I mean, I don't even know if that really exists out there, but that's probably, you're not going to find a woman like that. It's probably pretty rare.
It is very rare if you find that kind of loyalty. And the thing is, loyalty has to be an intentional, deliberate choice. It's probably, it's hard to find that on an instinctual level with anyone. Usually people just want what's in their own best self-interest.
Very rare.
Which is fair.
I think that's retarded, to be honest, because it's fair. It makes sense on like a baseline level. But I personally believe that if the society was trusting of each other more, we would all be happier. We would all be better if there was more loyalty all around. I really believe that. I believe all we have is each other at the end of the day. And if we're just trying to like snake each other and like flank each other and just try to step on each other to obtain power for ourselves, I mean, it just leads to a general community vibe of like misery. That's how I feel.
Yeah, it's literally survival of the fittest, which is not a fun that's not a fun friendly system. It's a system where the losers perish and then the winners.
I don't think it has to be that way, but that's just my opinion.
Maybe not. I feel like if we're at all headed in that direction, we creep toward it very slowly, it seems.
Yes.
And it's not happening very quickly. Have you read the book, The Moral Arc by, who wrote that book? I think it's Michael Shermer.
I have not. What's that about?
It's basically, let me make sure, The Moral Arc book. Let me make sure I'm not saying the wrong thing here. By Michael Shermer. It's basically a book that kind of chronicles mankind's gradual movement over time toward like a state of like being basically more moral. Life gets better. Things are basically better now than they were, you know, 1,000 years ago. And it's basically the way that science has impacted the human capacity to create a better society. So it's kind of a positive, and it kind of goes in line with what you're saying. It's kind of a positive outlook. Like, you know, humans are getting better at this. What's that?
It's a white pill.
Maybe it is. I don't know. I'm not an expert on those things, but I do think that loyalty is more rare than it is not. And that seems to be the truth of the world. Now, with that being said, contrary to popular belief, it's not the striking upon hard times that causes women to lose attraction and want to jump ship. And this is actually really important. This is another thing that I think men misunderstand. What causes women to want to jump ship is when the man hits on hard times and then he succumbs to the chaos and loses his ability to make plans to move forward and fix the situation. Yeah, he gets depressed. He like loses his shit, right? Men who panic and or men who seem to wallow in disaster or misfortune will quickly lose the respect and attraction of the women in their frame, even if those women up to this point have always been attracted to them. But this is a lot different than when man hit on disaster and they take control of the ship and they say, okay, listen, this didn't go well, but here's my plan. We're going to fix this. We're going to get past this. A lot of men break down in hard times and they don't maintain their frame in hard times. And this is what causes women to lose their attraction. And the reason I say this is because in my life, I've noticed when I was a beta, before I was living in alpha mentality, I used to do this. I used to wallow in self-pity. When bad things happened, I'd like, oh, poor me. I would just go into a chaotic, reactive mode. And then my whole life would fall apart. And then that's how my marriage ended. With that being said, since then, since I've been living an alpha mentality, God knows I've had hard times. However, not only did I stop making my hard times my partner's business, kind of, like, I just kind of dealt with it as a man. And she would only hear about 10% of it. But also, I would always make a plan. So it's like, I'm sitting at my desk at work, bad shit happens that could threaten my whole, you know, existence. And I say to myself, okay, this is bad, but you know what? This isn't going to beat me. I'm going to make a plan. I'm going to overcome this. And then I show up at the dinner table where she cooked dinner and I ask her how her day was. And it literally has no bearing on attraction. See, so this is a leadership ability I had to learn to kind of stay in masculine frame and handle my business and not make it, not make her existence threatened by my misfortune. And this completely got rid of the problem. Instead, when I would tell her the little bits and pieces I did tell her, she'd be very supportive. She'd be like, oh, what can I do to help? Blah, blah. But it's because I wasn't freaking out and panicking. As men, when we freak out and panic, women panic because they're like, oh my God, if he's panicking, we're literally fucked.
Yeah. Like, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, there we go. And like I always say, women smell weakness in men like a shark smells blood in the water. And so that's kind of why it matters. Yeah. Yeah. What do you think? Do you have anything to add to that, Holden?
I've heard women say things like, it's like he wants me to be his mother. And it's like, well, I bet you were in a situation, not you, but the woman, we're in a situation where he showed some weakness. Maybe he was going through something and maybe he came to you just as one human comes to another and wants basically sympathy and to commiserate and like to be assured that it's going to be okay. And women do not want to be the one assuring the man it's going to be okay. They want to be the one assured it's going to be okay. And it's like, I really saw in her eyes the absolute like brutalness. I was like, damn, you don't care about a man's struggles at all. You just kind of, I want him to be perfect like that. And that's how it is. And, but I think there's also, this is pretty negative, but the bright side is there's strength to be found in that. Like if you could sit down at the dinner table and be like, I'm stressed the fuck out. I'm thinking about all this shit. How was your day, baby? There's something, there's strength to be found there. You probably get a testosterone boost, honestly.
I think you do over time. At first, it's more difficult, but over time, when you prove to yourself that you can overcome things, this makes you feel like a hell of a man. Like it really does. Like for me, it made me feel so much more like a man than I did back when I was acting like a beta all the time, looking for, you know, looking to women for support, looking to women for reassurance. And you actually said it exactly true. Women do not want to be the one to tell a man it's going to be okay, to reassure him. They want to be the ones reassured. And this is a natural way of it in nature, but a lot of men hurt their attraction by doing this. Now, this doesn't mean as men, we don't need support or encouragement. We do. So I always say this,
and
is
that's the tricky part.
It is.
We want our woman to be by our side. It's like, babe, I'm going through these things. I could use a little support. And it's like, they're just like, they get this like support. You should be strong already. It's like, come on. I'm not made of steel here. I'm a human being.
Yeah, yeah. And
women really don't understand themselves. Cause they'll be like, they think they're so empathetic, but then nebulous. Yeah. I could talk about this for a long time.
No, and that's true. And a lot of men will say it's a trap. Women will tell you, it's okay. Tell me what you're going through. You can lean on me. And then when you do, then she loses attraction. This is so classic. This, I've seen this play out so many times. Women will deny this. They'll say, oh no, I do want you to tell me. Maybe they do want you to tell them, but then when they hear it, it does something to them.
Yes.
It really does. Yes. 100%.
Maybe they really do want you to tell them, but when they hear it, they don't like what they hear. They like tell, they look at you with those eyes kind of like.
Yeah. I believe that most women don't realize it's going to hurt their attraction to the man. I think they do genuinely want him to tell them because they don't understand their own, they don't understand their own psychology.
Mm-hmm. And then the and first ones would be like, just man up. And then they're also the first ones to be on Twitter virtue signaling how men need to show their emotions more and it's okay. Yes. You can cry too. It's like, yeah, no, we can't. Cause clearly you don't like that. Clearly you don't select for that. So it's yeah. You have to pick one. Either we cry and don't get laid, or we don't cry and we'd get laid.
Yeah. Which is exactly why I, going back to the beginning, why I say, you know, it dating in a feminine frame is projected onto men today. And that's what that is. Telling men, oh, you should be open about your feelings, blah, blah. It's like, okay, to a point. However, if you just say that to a guy and, and he believes you completely, that's projecting a feminine paradigm dating mindset onto him. And that's going to mean he's going to start living and dating like a woman from the feminine side, compromising his masculinity. And then it throws everything off. It throws off the whole balance, you know? And so it's very confusing to men. And I'm amazed when I see people give advice like that on Twitter, because I'm like, you don't know how much damage you're doing because you don't understand the situation. Is what I usually think. Even worse, if it's maliciously intended, like it's like, yeah, fuck man, I'm going to give them bad advice. I know that this will destroy their masculine attraction. If people actually do that, that's very awful. That's an awful
I don't think
thing
it's intentional. I really don't think it is delusional. Yeah. And I'm very curious as to how there's a huge gap in the amount of men that understand female dynamics and male dynamic psychology. And that women that don't understand men psychology and how they even think, like so many women do not understand a lick of how they or men think. And so many men do. Like, why is the gap? So why are women so bad at understanding?
Yeah, I think the vast majority of men don't understand either. I think the vast majority of men are totally clueless about women's
behavior. So too.
And I think, I'll be honest, I think it's because of the hyper-feminization of our society. Like, I think that we do a lot of focusing on women. We just focus on them all the time. It's like, oh, women are beautiful. Like their pages on Instagram. Oh, look at these models. Oh, look at these women, these beautiful women. Da, 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 da. What about men? Oh, watch rom-coms. They're just bumbling idiots. You know,
look at that loser like cleaning house. The sewage. Ha, 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 ha. It's like, yeah, that guy's the only reason you have a clean system.
Yeah. Like I sometimes say, and I just don't want to be like a Debbie Downer about this, but here's the thing. Like I've often said that one of the worst blows to masculinity in our culture was the kind of that era of sitcoms, like Everybody Loves Raymond and stuff, like where they always portrayed men as these weak idiots. And then women were these like powerful, smart ones. Mm. Women had to keep all these guys from doing just dumb shit all the time. And it's like, they completely emasculated the masculine frame in all
the commercials. Things.
Yeah. Oh, commercials too. Yeah.
The dumb dad who doesn't know how to clean a dish.
Yeah. The dumb dad who's like slightly overweight wearing khaki.
Silly husband. Here's this product, dumbass.
Yeah. Best sleep on the 100%. Couch, bitch. Yeah. I think that whole era of like media did a number on masculine frame and it made men think wonky things about masculinity. I really think it played into it. Nowadays, I think I'm kind of happy that we see more actual examples of masculinity in media. For example, the show Vikings that was, you know, created by the History Channel. I think there are some great examples of actual masculine frame in that show. I think that the show Peaky Blinders, there's some like damaged kind of flawed versions of masculinity in that show because they're dealing with like PTSD and stuff. However, you know, the male characters in that show, they really do project a lot of masculine strength. And so that's like cool. I think that we're starting to see more of that, but yeah, that's what I think it is. Hyper-feminization of society, especially through the early 2000s and late 90s. I kind of think.
I think so too. And I think, honestly, this would be sound weird, but a lot of it is because we can't be men. We're not allowed to have physical fights anymore. Back in the 80s, my dad would talk about, hey, when we have problems, we settled them with this. We didn't just shoot each other or talk shit on the internet. Like, and that is actually, that settles beefs. That takes care of the problem. And I feel like a lot of times two men need to fight it out. But now they just get arrested. They get charged. Now they have assault on their, you can't fight anyone anymore.
Yeah. Women, or it gets to a point where it becomes trashy or like too far. Like, they should have probably fought way earlier before they were so mad, and they could have just squashed it. And then, you know, I've done that. I've engaged in, like, you know, fights with my friends in my friend group, not in like a violent way, but just as shows of masculine competition. Mm. I have also had friends legitimately challenge me. Like, I want to fight you right now. Like, and then we fought, and then we squashed it for whatever reason. Usually these things were silly because they never got to the point of being serious, like, things.
It was cathartic, though.
It was cathartic, and it was really good for our relationships. And there's something good that happens to a man when he has to engage in combat to, like, uphold his honor. Even if he loses, the fact that he put up a fight does something good to him, because I've won and I've lost these kind of contests. You know, I've been pinned, I've tapped out, you know, I've made other guys tap out. And the thing is that in both cases, I walked away feeling like, okay, you know, I did my best there, rather than it's just like, you know, sitting around a table talking shit to each other or gossiping about each other. It's not.
Yeah. You might be like, he's the better man, he won, but he also knows that I'm not afraid of him and I'll fight back.
Yeah, 100%.
There's respect there.
Now, coming off this conversation about leadership, I did list 5 key leadership attraction qualities that women look for. And we've kind of already covered these in more conversationally, but this is the list. He's a man with a plan. He has a vision and goals for his life. He's a hard worker. He's empathetic, kind, and respectful, right? So this is important. But you have to have ironclad boundaries. And this is another thing. Men have to have very firm boundaries. And this is how I always say it. You have to have ironclad boundaries and enforce them with kindness and respect. So it's like, I can't budge on them, but I'm not going to, like, go crazy and, you know, lash out at people. I'm going to uphold my boundaries with strength and kindness and respect. Number 4, he invests in his family and tribe. So it's investment, leadership investment. And number 5, he's committed to helping his family survive, thrive, and succeed. One leadership trait that a lot of people misunderstand is, a lot of people, when they think of the word leader, they think, oh, you know, I don't have to work as hard. I can tell other people what to do. But this is a very false idea of leader. A true leader will be working harder than anyone.
At the front.
Yeah, at the front. And the success of the tribe will weigh on their shoulders. They'll be like, you know, I'm the one who's responsible. If everyone else fails, guess what? They're not the ones who get the blame. I'm the one who takes the blame, because I was the one who was supposed to lead us to survival. And so as a men, we have to learn to take that responsibility very seriously, and we have to work for it. And this is attractive to women too, right? This, we're repaid for this with female desire. Okay. And then number 7, the last sexual value metric we're going to talk about, an athletic body, health, wellness, fitness, and aesthetics. Health, wellness, fitness, and just general overall physical power and athleticism also matter to women. Yeah. Heck yeah.
Put that in your thumbnail.
Holden's got the ripped part down of the,
I may not be elf. Top shelf, but I have that down. You can't deny that.
You're doing good, man. You're ahead of me on the path. I still have about 6 pounds of extra on the midsection, but we're getting there.
You'll get there.
And the reasons for this are pretty simple as well. A healthy body conveys higher levels of not only health, wellness, and physical prowess, but also fertility. Think about what would have happened to a tribal woman in ancient history if she were to pair bond with a lame, limp, or just in general physically weak male partner. As they struggled to navigate the dangerous landscape of the primitive world and wilderness, the woman would have been forced to carry a heavier load and bear more of a burden for survival, simply because the man she chose was a weaker specimen and wouldn't have been capable of pulling as much weight. This definitely would have caused them to have to move across landscape slower. It would have rendered them unable to carry as much food with them. It would have made them more vulnerable to dangers like predators and enemies, etc. Not to mention, there also would have been an underlying fear that any children born of this man's genetics might inherit the same weakness, and thus only further render their family unit incapable of long-term survival, even years down the road. By contrast, A woman who chose a healthy, fit, athletic man who was powerful and vital would have stood a much better chance for survival. This type of man could have carried more food. He'd been better at hunting. He would have been better able to protect them from danger. Plus, this woman could be reasonably sure that their children would acquire the same strong traits and thus would create a positive forward momentum for the tribe for survival in the future. Therefore, it's no mystery that women are instinctively hardwired to prefer men with an athletic V-shaped torso, strong muscles, and defined abs, as opposed to men who have a beer gut, who are overweight, and who give off other signs of a lack of physical health and fitness. One of the craziest things that I see propagated today is these articles that say women actually prefer the dad bod.
No.
This is so, it's so crazy to me that people write stuff like that and that they actually try to cite science to back it up. It's so crazy. I one time wrote this article about this, like what's the ideal body type that women prefer? And I did a lot of research. I really dove into the science about it. And it was just, the further I went, the more it became obvious. Women prefer the healthiest specimen of man possible. Men with the dad bod, they're overweight, they're weaker, they are estrogenized, right? It's like they have man boobs. They've got a more rounded kind of almost like feminine physique. Right. Mm. And this is, I think this is such a great shame. And actually Holden and I, for those listening after, you know, listening to the recording,
bro, I got to leave in a few minutes cause I got to go at 8, but can I butt in real quick before I go?
Go for it, man.
I disagree slightly. Women do like that type of body, but if you only have that body, and I've definitely been there, it is not going to serve you anything. All you're going to be is little eye candy in the corner of the room. If you don't have anything else to back it up, you're basically a clown. You're like something, you're like an attraction, something to look at. So I have definitely never gotten laid just because of how my body was. Like I've even had like walking down the street, abs ripped up, I'm tan, I'm sweaty, all shiny. Girls are literally like rolling down the windows like, you're so hot. And then you go and try to talk to girls and it's like, they don't want anything to do with you. They're not trying to actually do anything. So I'm still,
It's just one part of it.
And, later we can talk about that. I gotta go. Thank you for having me.
Hey, sounds good, Holden. Thanks for chiming in. I'll see you later, man.
Have a good night.
You too. All right. So a healthy body conveys higher levels of not only health, wellness, physical prowess, but also fertility. So anyway, I just think that this whole dad bod thing does a disservice to men. I want to see men getting themselves jacked and ripped and in great physical shape. This is what I'm doing in my life. I want to see men doing this. It's going to be better for their attraction, better for their health, better for their wellness. I've been really overweight. I lived with a dad bod for the majority of my adult life. And then I've also been in great shape. Right now, I'm probably in the best shape I've ever been in. And let me tell you, there's no comparison. The way that women respond to me now with a better, healthier body is just, there is no comparison. Before, it took so much more effort to get women to pay attention to me. Now, it's almost like women come out of the woodwork to flirt with me, to hit on me. Even with my girlfriend, I noticed, like, because when we first got together, I was heavier. I was like 257 pounds, which is pretty heavy, right? It was coming off the COVID thing. I was being lazy. I wasn't putting in that effort. And then when we got together, I started losing weight because I just wanted to get healthier. Now I'm down to 206.8 is what I weighed in the other day, is like where I'm at right now. And I'm just looking so much better. And it's amazing how much more, like, even though we've been together for over a year at this point, as I become better looking and I get, you know, in better shape and I make my body healthier, you can tell she's that much more interested in me in an intimate way, right? It just, there's no comparison. Okay. So it's not the only factor, but it is an important factor. That's the seventh value metric. Okay. How to increase your attraction levels as a man. This is the next part. And we're just going to go through this real quick. took a lot of time to talk about those seven attraction metrics and why they matter. And now I'm going to tell you about the 10-step process that I take in my life to maximize these attraction metrics. And I'm going to link to this blog post in the description. You can go read these more in depth if you want, but I'm just going to go through them pretty quickly. Number one, embrace the alpha mentality. This is always the first step. You guys hear me talk about this. You know exactly what's coming up. You know what I'm about to talk about. Being alpha means to take action-oriented, intentional control of your life, energy, resources, and strategic trajectory, embracing radical self-responsibility, shirking victim mentality, and determining to utilize your time and resources wisely to proactively create a meaningful, significant destiny and lasting legacy of greatness in the world. Number two, mind your business. Minding your business is basically my way of describing the process of seeing to the vital infrastructure of your life in order to take full responsibility and control of your resources. In other words, get your life together. Start paying your bills on time. Make sure you pay your taxes. Make sure you show up to work on time. Make sure that you're doing everything within your power to keep your life moving forward at a stable and consistent direct trajectory. Number three, get your money. We talked about wealth and resource potential. As men, we want to be attractive, so we must be committed to the process of building financial wealth and resource potential for ourselves. Number four, pursue your purpose in life. Do you know what your purpose is as a man? Do you know what your mission in life is? If you don't, you're going to suffer in attraction because men who don't understand what their purpose is will send out weaker masculine signals. They'll basically be men adrift in the world without a concrete direction to invest in and move forward in. Women do not want to be the mission. They want to join high-value men on amazing missions and adventures. So have a mission. Step number five, level up mind, body, spirit. This is non-negotiable. We have to be working out. We have to be meditating. We have to be learning new things. We have to be engaging in some kind of spiritual practice or relationship with ourselves, right? All these things matter. Number six, become 1% better every day than you were yesterday. No stagnating, no quitting your forward momentum to become better men. We have to continue to level up every single day. Number seven, develop your leadership ability. If you are not developing leadership ability as a man, you're going to struggle with masculine frame. I don't care if you're the lowest man on the totem pole at your work or whatever. When you come home to your family, when you're trying to date, you're going to need to have leadership skills to broadcast your attraction. So learn how to be a capable leader. Number eight, embrace true masculine frame. A lot of men misunderstand this part of the conversation. And going back to the email, the question that I read beforehand, yes, as men, we need to be confident. We do not want to be clingy. We do not want to be needy. And it all comes back to this, walking in true masculine frame. A lot of men are at war with their own masculinity. It's crucial to be in touch with your own masculinity and to learn exactly how to become a strong and capable man, okay? You can research this by going on my blog or by watching my YouTube or any of my podcast episodes related to masculinity, manliness, whatever. But masculine frame just basically means being at peace with our own masculinity and willing to embrace masculine principles and values, okay? Number nine, shirk the victim mentality. As alpha mentality men, we cannot be alpha and be victims. Therefore, it's crucial that if you want to level up in your attraction, you need to get rid of the victim mentality and take full responsibility for your life, resistant life, existence, and destiny. I can't talk right now. And this leads us to the final point. Embrace radical self-responsibility. As men, the buck must always stop with us. Me and Holden talked a lot about this already. We actually had some great conversation on this topic. As a high-value man, you must always be the commander-in-chief, the consoler-in-chief, and the one who makes himself responsible for tribal success. You can't just give excuses and say, oh, I don't know, it's not my problem, etc. As men, we must assume the great heavy burden of success for ourselves and for our families. This is a vital virtue and value that will help to make you more attractive, but it'll also make you more effective. And that's really the whole point. And that's going to conclude my dissertation on what do women want in a man and how to develop that for yourself as a man. I hope that this has been helpful. If it has, hit that thumbs up button, hit that subscribe button if you're watching on YouTube. And that's going to be it. If you have any questions, drop a comment and let me know. I'd be happy to answer them. And also, if you want a little bit more information about this alpha mentality business, I have a free ebook that I offer. You can find the link in the description called An Introduction to the Alpha Mentality. Download it and read it. And that'll give you, it's like 11 chapters to help you understand real alpha mentality, what it means, how to display it. And the book is for men and women because there is such a thing as an alpha female, and women should strive to be alpha females. All right, that's going to be it for this one. Go with grace, my friends. Never give up your power. This is Josh Segafis signing off.
Thank you for listening. Make sure to visit www.joshuasegafis.com. Catch you on the flip side.